gathered about 500 of Al Gore's trainees for a reunion, a regrouping, and sort of retraining. And I just had lunch at a place called Noshville in Nashville. It was quite good. New York Deli in Nashville. I want to welcome to the Green Front a friend, colleague in terms of presentations, Peter Joseph. He is by day an emergency room doctor, and by on the side anyway, if not by night and weekends, whenever he can, he is dealing with a planetary emergency, and that is the threat of climate change to all of us. And Peter is a very active educator and presenter. I've seen his presentation with a group of high schoolers that started out falling asleep at the beginning of the hour. They were involved and engaged, and that is no small feat. So Peter is one of my favorite examples of what can happen when one understands this information and has the gifts of communicating it. And welcome to the Green Front, Peter.
Nice to be with you, Betsy. Thank you.
Great to be back here in Nashville. Are you excited about what's going
on? Yes. Absolutely. I love these conferences. It's the best group of people I know.
You know, it when we're here, it feels like, gee, we're not on a we're on our people's planet now. You know, we're not on a different planet because they're sort of a segment of society that's really feeling the urgency and has been for some time. And it's nice when we kind of convene and can, you know, channel our energies and our urgencies. And that's part of what this is about. But people need information. And what has your experience been like in the 2.5 years or so since we were trained in terms of getting out there and letting people know about the nuts and bolts of climate change, not only what's at stake, but, you know, what we need to do about it? What kind of responses have you had, the gamut, if you will?
Yeah, well, what surprises me most is how little people really understand about the urgency of the climate change threat. I think there's a very active campaign by forces that don't want to change to instill doubt in people's minds that this is serious, that it's real, that it's really happening, and that it's urgent, and that it's personal, and it's something we need to take very seriously. And that campaign is very well funded, and it's working. The polls are showing a declining number of people who are worried about climate change and willing to make the changes that we have to make and to support the legislation that we really do need in order to dodge this bullet. And some of the more simple things that I tell people seem to be news to them, despite the fact that a lot of them have seen Mr. Gore's movie. That was a couple years ago, so literally no one's watching that now. And what they see in the media is this kind of balanced reporting where they'll report, you know, Antarctica's melting and the polar ice caps are melting, but there's one scientist who doesn't think it's due to human effect. So they'll report that, despite the fact that there's no scientific doubt whatsoever that humans are changing the planet that we live on in a very dangerous way and very, very rapidly.
What are some of the basic things that you do convey that people don't know and that surprise you that they're not aware of? And besides changing the light bulb, I think everyone knows about that.
Yeah, well, for me, the key message in my talks is to instill the sense of urgency that the climate scientists themselves are feeling. For example, Rajendra Pachauri, who's was the chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who's going to be here this weekend, said we have 4 years. Jim Hansen, the lead climate scientist from NASA, says Obama has 4 years to get meaningful legislation through to start the process of turning our civilization away from the brink. And the reason that's true, that people don't understand, is due to the way the climate system, and it is a system like a huge clock, how the climate system works. And the key message is that there are feedback loops within the climate system where a small change in one part of the system results in a larger change in another part of the system, and that change can become self-sustaining. That's an exponential change system. We saw it in 2007 when the polar ice cap, which NASA maps by satellite every year in September at the end of the summer, shrank by a huge percentage more than it did the year before. It's been going steadily down since they started doing this in 1980. But in 2007, that curve, which was floating down at about a 30-degree angle, suddenly became very, very steep, and it freaked them out. They didn't understand why. It's because of feedback mechanisms that aren't even in their models. And the problem with humans and their political thinking is that we think linearly. You know, we think like 1, 2, 3, 4. We think 2, 4, 6, 8. We don't think 2, 4, 16, 16 squared, that number squared, you know, where things take off very, very quickly, where it can go out of control. And that's why these scientists are saying, hey, we're out of time. Time's
that's
up.
Right. That's right. You're reminding me of the point of the movie where they showed the melting sea ice, the feedback loop. So where you had ice, white ice, deflecting the sun's rays, all of a sudden you've got black sea absorbing the sun's ray, and then you get this exponential, you know, rapidity in terms of impact.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's
why
that's a bad feedback.
They're saying we've
sometimes
got
closing
only
the
a
triangle
few years.
Is something. In this case, it's not. That loop, that feedback loop. Peter?
Right. Yes.
I wanted to ask you, since you're an emergency room doctor and you know, deal with people's health needs all the time, and there was just a study released yesterday, I think it out of Lancet, how global warming is going to have a huge impact on world health. I mean, for some of us, the connections between personal health and planetary health have always been pretty clear, but I think there's just more and more evidence that we're going to have to make those connections before they, you know, become, you know, painfully apparent. What's your take on that, since you, you know, deal with individual health, but this is a planetary emergency that could impact all of us if we have food shortages, water shortages, you know, more, you know, intemperate climate?
Well, look, you don't need to go to medical school for 4 years to know that if you make your planet sick, you're going to make the creatures on the planet sick. We're all tied in. We are part of the ecosystem. Our food doesn't really come from the grocery store. It comes from nature. Our medicines don't come from the pharmacy. They come from nature. Our air and our water and our well-being all come from a stable ecosystem that we totally depend on. Now, when you start breaking down what the implications are of severe climate change. You have drought. That means crop failures. You have new diseases. You have new vectors. You know, all the nasty critters that we don't like, the ticks and the flies and the rats and whatever, they thrive in ecosystems that are out of kilter. You know, if it gets too hot and the birds die, guess what proliferates? It's the rodents. They carry disease. If it's too wet, if it's too rainy, and you have overwhelming floods that sweep all the animal waste into the water supply, you're going to have diarrheal disease and cholera and various other gastrointestinal ailments. If you create mass human migrations, and you know, the people in the areas that are hit with drought or flooding, they're not just going to sit there and die, they're going to get up and move. So what happens when there's migration from Mexico to the U.S. or in Africa or from Bangladesh up to Bhutan? You have racial conflicts, ethnic conflicts, people on the move. That's a very unsavory proposition that leads to, obviously, disease and pandemics and whatnot. So
and we're already seeing that on the
human implications are nothing short of calamitous. It's, you know, just read the Book of Revelations.
Ah, and Code Red is another book you recommend.
Code Red, for my money, is the best thing I've read lately. It's from the Australian Friends of the Earth that makes the case for an emergency action, for a declaration of emergency. Let's pretend that this is the day after Pearl Harbor, and the President of the United States recognizes that the world has just suffered or is about to suffer a Pearl Harbor-type calamity, and goes on the air and says to the entire population, we are going into emergency mode. We're going out of business as usual. We're going into emergency mode. What are you willing to do? What are you willing to do to stave off the calamitous consequences of the worst of climate change? We're already signed up for climate change. We're going to have it. We're seeing it now. We'd be kidding ourselves if we said, let's stop global warming. We can't stop global warming. It's already in the pipeline. But what we can possibly stop, if we get our act together, is the worst of global warming. We're going to have it. The question is, how bad is it going to be? Is it going to be 2 degrees centigrade? Is it going to be 4 degrees, 6 degrees? And I would remind people that in past geologic history, the Earth has swung between ice ages and hot periods. We know that. And it doesn't take much to kick it off from hot to cold or cold to hot. The climate system is an irritable beast. It's temperamental because of all these feedback loops within it. So we're pushing it. We're pushing it in the direction of hot. What could happen is that pendulum not only swings towards hot, but the acceleration that we're giving it with our emissions makes it swing way into a hot zone that we haven't seen on this planet for millions of years, that we've never seen within the evolutionary lifespan of human beings, and certainly not of human civilization, which has only been around since the ending of the last ice age when it got nice. We've had a nice, stable, relatively stable temperature zone for human civilization to thrive. So what's at stake? We're not going to wipe out life on Earth. We're not probably going to wipe out every single human being. But we are jeopardizing the civilization that we've all come to respect and depend on and admire, and which has been built by our ancestors lovingly.
And maybe taken
and passed along to us, and we now have it in our hands. We can drop the ball.
And we are apparently dropping the ball, but we're going to hopefully catch it just in time, and that's what these 500 volunteers are here to do. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter Joseph, for all the great work you do, both inside the hospital and outside.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And we come back right after these messages. We'll turn to solutions to the climate crisis. Stay with us. You're on the Green Front.
Thank you for listening to the Green Talk Network. Help to spread the green by involving your family and friends. You're doing your part. Now help them think green. Spread the green. The Green Talk Network.
In today's business world, sustainability is the key driver of business opportunity and brand value. Join over 600 business leaders, brand strategists, designers, and sustainability execs at Sustainable Brands 09, the third annual gathering of business leaders focused on innovating for sustainability, May 31st through June 4th in Monterey, California. At Sustainability Brands 09, you'll hear Dell, Office Depot, Clorox, FedEx, Caterpillar, Williams-Sonoma, Method, Frito-Lay, and many more. Share stories of sustainable business success. Learn more at www.sustainablebrands09.com or call 650-344-9693. That's 650-344-9693. On the Green Front, listeners get a free night stay at the Monterey Marriott. Use code OGFSB094H. Restrictions apply.
Let's see. The planet is hot. Droughts, fires, floods. But our economy is cold. Recession, job losses. What if we could make our planet cooler and the economy hotter? We can. If we end our dependence on foreign oil and switch to clean energy. The carbon pollution from oil and coal that's melting the ice caps and warming the planet? Cap it and spur new investment and jobs in clean energy like wind and solar. Investing in clean energy could provide more than 37 million jobs for American workers in the next 20 years. That's right, 37 million jobs. Closing the carbon pollution loophole makes polluters pay and helps clean companies prosper so they can hire more workers. As a result, the planet cools, the economy heats up. Pretty cool. I mean, hot.
Paid for by the Alliance for Climate Protection.
Hi, Betsy Rosenberg here, and I'm here to tell you that green works. I mean, it really works. GreenWorks Natural Cleaners, that is. My family and I, along with our wonderful housekeeper Maria, were fortunate enough to be one of the early testers for Clorox's line of natural cleaners. And happy to report from the Green Front, we love everything we've tried. No kidding. Even Maria, who had previously rejected eco-friendly cleaning products I brought home, loved it. From the natural all-purpose cleaner to the natural dishwashing liquid to the latest Great Green offering, biodegradable cleaning wipes. My husband especially loves those. He's a bit of a clean fanatic and uses them to wipe down the kitchen counters after I've taken a swipe with the sponge. After patting himself on the back for his superior cleaning techniques, he just tosses those biodegradable wipes right into our compost heap, and voila! What could be better than that? Well, I'm happy to report that Greenworks natural cleaners cost less than other eco-friendly brands. So take it from this eco-mom on the green front lines, Greenworks.